Hi everyone, and welcome to the RegTech Report, your update on all things RegTech. My name is Carl Viertel, and with me is Stefan Celestiel. Our mission is to bring you the latest news, speak with industry pioneers, and muse about the latest tech. Hello and welcome everyone back to the RegTech Report. My name is Carl Viertel, and I'm joined as always with Stefan.
Hi Carl.
And today we want to talk about innovation from a number of different perspectives. Now, first, we'd like to start out with talking about innovation versus compliance. Now, a lot of people, if you start talking about innovation and compliance, they would see those as opposites. So compliance being the hinderer of innovation, or anytime anyone wants to do something cool in the organization, there's always a compliance obligation that prevents it from happening. But on the other hand, RegTech in itself, we've set ourselves essentially the mission of innovating in the compliance space. So are they still opposing forces, or are there synergies?
Well, it's a very common complaint, right? I mean, this is always, especially when you talk to bankers or these highly regulated industries, who are saying, I wish we could do that, but then, you know, we have to follow all these rules and then it will take ages to do something. But I think often it's also an excuse. Because it means you can shift the blame and the accountability somewhere else, I guess.
Very good point. Now, one of the approaches to enabling innovation in this space has been sandboxes, regulatory sandboxes. A bit of a
used and misused, maybe. Even,
yeah, right? A little bit of a mixed bag there. Mm. I think you were a little bit involved in some discussions in the UK, correct?
Yeah, actually, playing in these circles, yeah, with regulators, sometimes being even at the meetings. It's interesting what they say about it, and if you talk to different ones, because UK and maybe also Singapore, they've been very for the concept of sandboxes.
And also maybe we can explain the concept of sandboxes for everyone who doesn't know it. So a sandbox basically means a safe space where the regulator says, experiment, or to their regulated entities such as banks, insurance companies, experiment with a new RegTech technology or a compliance solution, and nothing bad will happen because we're still in the sandbox, and then we can move on to other things if it works.
Yeah, I mean, you can even think about the metaphor, right? And I quite intentionally said playing before, because, I mean, a sandbox is where kids play and build their little sandcastles, and it's a safe space. The grown-ups are looking from the outside, but you can do your little kids games in there, and I think that's where it's coming from, and saying, oh, the fintechs are kids, you know, they need to be protected in the beginning and have some space to learn and grow, I guess.
It's not condescending at all.
Well, it may be also the times have changed, because some of these fintechs are no longer kids, right? I mean, they are really more teenagers plus.
Yeah, so I mean, I think the there was a lot of value that was generated from the sandbox experiments in the UK with the FCA. I think, I mean, some of our friends were participants in some of the cycles there, and I think I heard some pretty positive things there. The German regulator BaFin, on the other hand, is very, very opposed. So I was at the BaFin Tech, which is BaFin's tech conference last year, and the head of the BaFin, Hufeld, came on stage, and someone asked him about sandboxes, and he says, "I've never heard anything more stupid than that."
Yeah,
so he was very drastic.
Yeah, I mean, this is the very consistent talking point they have, right? And I mean, it comes back to that they say you're running the same kind of business, the same kind of risks, so the same rules should apply, which I would have to agree to. But maybe it's a bit also of an understanding, because having these sandboxes actually doesn't mean you have a kind of free-for-all where you can just do what you want. Actually, it is quite stringent also to get into something like the FCA sandbox in the UK. You have to pass all kinds of rules and tests. But I think the one of the advantages that, and why people actually think about it positively, is they have some... the interface to the regulator is maybe then operating more on the pace and the kind of interaction that startups are used to compared to big entities and big organizations.
Yeah, I mean, I think the real value is actually also the interaction of the regulator, that the regulator can at least get an insight or a view of what's happening in the market. I must say I'm not entirely on board with the German regulator's position that they just say the regulated institute shall evaluate and make its decisions, and then they will come and evaluate if they agree with them after the fact, which... You know, yes, you can't, give carte blanche to a company and say, yeah, just use the software and everything's cool. I mean, that's obviously not the role of a regulator. But I think at least a bit of a bit of experimentation, a little bit of collaboration can save the system as a whole, a whole lot of risk and cost.
Yeah, and maybe just giving more guidance. And they do that, but the pace is too slow for today's world, where they need ages to bring out these new things, like, for example, on guidance around using cloud services and also reevaluating. This is my big pet peeve. That I also tell to people from BaFin and others, reevaluating really the effect that certain regulation had and whether it really actually reached the intended goal or whether it's just creating bureaucracy and not is not actually creating value in terms of what were the objectives in the beginning.
I mean, we actually had a good case last week. So we wanted to get an evaluation on a certain very specific topic from BaFin. And so one of our guys from Customer Success, they actually have a fintech inquiry form and inquired there. And the response was, you are not a regulated entity. And therefore, we will not respond to you. And so, you know, that was that. Yeah. And so I understand where they're coming from. But again, a little bit more collaboration, I think, would just, it would help all of us.
Yeah, indeed. And in that way, also the mandate that the German regulator has is a bit different compared to FCA. So at least that's what they always say, why they can't do these things. But it's maybe also a mentality thing.
Well, so there's the next BaFin Tech, I think, coming up in September. So hopefully we can attend and let's see how sentiments have changed in a couple months. Our next segment, we want to address anti-money laundering. Now, this is a really interesting one because I think it's from an innovation perspective, a very interesting topic. Because on the one hand, there are a lot of really cool regtech companies that produce AML, ATF, so anti-terrorist financing solutions. So there's a lot of innovation in this space. On the other hand, innovation in financial technology has made the problem of money laundering and terrorist financing a lot worse.
Yeah. In some ways, you can almost automate this nowadays. But maybe let's even deconstruct that topic a bit and take a step back and see what is it actually that people are trying to address as an example of why are certain regulations there. And if you think about in general about financial regulation, there's actually a couple main objectives that it all ties back to. So you have something like preventing systemic risk. Yeah, what happened in a global financial crisis, that this is a risk of all the banks collapsing because of interconnected liabilities and credit and so on. So this is one very big thing. The other is consumer protection, that you're not defrauding your consumers and they lose all their money because of wrong practices. And the third, and this is where AML ties in, is basically terrorist and anti-terrorist enforcement or organized crime. Preventing
unlawful cases from being financed or being part of the financial system.
Yeah, and because, this is, of course, a big thing, and that's also not new. This is what criminals have been trying to kind of use legitimate means in the normal economy to basically the funds they get from, I don't know, their drug dealing or whatever, to actually use them. Because if you have cash somewhere like Pablo Escobar in his cushions or something like that, you can't really use it, can you? Not in today's world. Maybe it used to be the case. Yeah.
Now, I think they're sort of for even much smaller criminal enterprises than Pablo Escobar, I think there's some good examples of AML failing in some modern tech. And I think Germany is a little bit at the forefront of that.
Yeah, Germany being such a cash-reliant society. It actually gets very bad marks from the FATF, the Financial Action Task Force, every year. Because, for example, buying houses and properties you can do with pretty basically unlimited amounts of cash. Yeah. And normally you're supposed to be like banks also when they, if you're an act transacting certain things, you're supposed to report suspicious activity. There's a concept called the SAR, the Suspicious Activity Report. And there's some rules when you, any employee in a bank, for example, notices something, they're obligated to report this up the chain and then to a regulator. But in a lot of cases, especially with cash-based transactions, this is not happening on how it should be.
And I mean, most recently, N26 got into quite a bit of trouble in that case.
Yeah, I mean that is the trade-off of having high growth, right? You might be neglecting certain things. On the one hand, it's the typical thing you would do is some kind of transaction monitoring that used to be people or some kind of keyword check that if there's something like, I don't know, bomb or drugs in there or something like that, right? Or nowadays more with AI methods. And the other part of it is verifying who are the people and organizations actually interacting there, the so-called KYC, Know Your Customer check. And this is, I think, also where it's well known that on these new fintech banks who often use these kind of video ident or let's say fast, lightweight KYC processes, that it's becoming easier to create bank accounts that are not fully verified.
So I'm going to challenge that a little bit. So traditional wisdom is if someone walks into a bank and has a piece of paper with a squiggly line on it that is his signature, then that is more real than a, for example, video ident from ID Now or any of the providers and biometric identification cards or something like that. So, like, yes, it's scalable and it's you can commit crimes or fraud more remotely, but is it really that much easier to defraud the system than just, I don't know, walking into a bank and claiming to be someone else with a forged document?
I think the difference is everywhere where we have the digital revolution, it's applying also there because you can use more technology to support that activity. And you can scale. I think scalability is really the key here. Mm. You can scale it massively because sending people somewhere to branches, that probably works here and there, or you have this, these classified ads. You had that for decades where people say, you want to earn like a lot of money by working at home, but you just have to accept some transactions and forward them on. This is a classic money laundering scheme. And you can scale this so much more with the internet and technology nowadays, yeah, and duping people to help you on that.
Fair enough. That actually does lead us into our top three that we'll do in just a minute. But actually, now I'd like to first go into the news. Now, a few things that I read over the last couple of days. First of all, a new RegTech market size number came up. I mean, these obviously, there's a lot of hope and unicorn dust sort of floating around there, and I'm not really sure where they come from. But I found a number, 55.28 billion by 2025, and a compounded annual growth rate of 52.8%.
Which is pretty amazing number. I mean, there have been these market size estimates floating around with different numbers, but typically not at this growth rate, and this is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think big enough as a purveyor of RegTech services.
Fine RegTech services.
Fine RegTech services. Another interesting news bit, the FCA released their annual report, and big surprise, operational resilience was a huge topic. They've most regulators have some term, maybe not operational resilience, at least to define the same thing here in Germany. The BAIT and VAIT for insurance and banking ask for essentially the same. It's all around essentially ensuring that services remain, even though you source all of the various components to provide that service, and you ensure continuity by and manage risks, manage threats, manage vulnerabilities. I think a huge opportunity for RegTech, because there is no way that you're going to achieve the desired operational resilience with spreadsheets.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just a continuation, right? I mean, the Bank of England brought out this term, I think, even last year. Now there's some more opinion from the FCA. It's actually another sign that they are more proactive regulator than maybe in other countries, because they are bringing out these guidance more often. And it's also a sign of the priorities and the focus they will have in the coming months. Also something where this panic that usually sets in shortly before deadlines is wholly unfounded, because these topics are always announced with a long lead time.
Yeah.
And then people who will claim, like, in half a year or so, oh, we're caught by surprise. No, this was already discussed for 2 years or whatever.
Yeah. Even though I was at an event in London a few weeks ago, and it was a lot of pretty senior guys, and one of the people is from chief risk officer from a very large bank was saying, oh, to transform to a service-oriented operational resilience, he would need a £5 billion budget or something. So, I mean,
okay. That's a lot of zeros.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I'm not sure if that's sort of a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to any announcement by a regulator, just to say, oh, it'll cost so much and it'll hurt the consumer, blah, blah, blah. Or, I mean, obviously, yes, the transformation is huge and it is a daunting task. But I'd wager a bet that you can probably get it done for a little bit less than $5
billion. Yeah. It's about priorities and focus again, right? Where how do you eat an elephant? You cut it up into very small pieces and eat it one by one.
Yeah?
And
whoa, that got dark really fast.
I mean, you need to decide where to start. That's the whole thing about any kind of complex endeavor.
Fair enough. last but not least, the cybersecurity world is obviously very prominent, with some big conferences happening in Vegas.
So yeah, supposedly the hacker camp or school vacation in the summer. The three conferences going on there at the same time.
So we could think of two. So Black Hat and DEF CON. Do we know what the third one was?
Yeah, was too lazy. I could Google now quickly. I'm not sure, but it's all happening in August, and basically pretty much the whole so-called hacker community. Yeah? Black Hat is the name of one, but it's mostly white hats and gray hats. If you know what do you know what that means, Carl? Are you a white hat or a gray hat or a black hat?
I don't really wear hats that much. No, so I mean, obviously the white, gray, and black refers to the level of maliciousness with which you would attack systems.
Yeah, or like, are you more on the criminal side or on the protecting side?
Well, let's wait for the top three and we'll evaluate afterwards.
Exactly.
But for all of you who might be listening to us on vacation and have a flight back home ahead of them, some my favorite news out of the conferences. Some guy presented a hack in which he addressed the core systems of the Boeing 787 Dreamliner through the entertainment unit in his seat.
Yeah.
That's not good news.
It's really a scary topic. I guess it's still a bit of a proof of concept right now. I mean, I think he was mainly looking at code, firmware code he found on the internet, because it was not protected somewhere. And then found a lot of potential vulnerabilities in the firewall, basically between where you watch your videos in the seat and what controls for the engines, for example.
Yeah, I mean, that is messed up on so many levels. But I think the striking thing from a macro perspective is, I mean, the value of Boeing has been just absolutely decimated through the 737 MAX thing. And obviously, that was also mainly a software issue, right? So the surprising nature of one of the, you know, most manufacturing focused industries in the world of, you know, making machinery is being brought down by software. So a fairly interesting turn of events. And now the top three. So fitting to our...
Don't forget the jingle.
Ah.
Hey. Hey. Oh.
Top three.
It's the...
Top three.
So fitting to our topic of innovation and anti-money laundering, Stefan and I are going to come up with three innovative ways to launder money.
Yeah.
So
some business ideas around that.
So, I mean, no one can say that we don't help our listeners, right? So if you're out there, you have a lot of cash that needs that of questionable origin, we've got you covered. So, Stefan, if you were advising one of our trusted listeners as to how to introduce his cash into the system and make it usable, what would be your number three suggestion?
So that would be a pretty standard one, I think. It's basically opening or buying a barbershop / beauty salon. There's a ton of them here in the city where I'm always thinking they cannot be operating at a profit with prices they charge. I guess that's... that is already the standard approach to do something like that.
Also, Better Call Saul, also in the back room of a beauty salon, just saying.
Exactly.
So my third option is quite similar, and it's, I think, a very German thing. So around our office here in the west of Munich, there are tons of little restaurants, and none of them take cards, so or credit cards, or EC cards, as they're called in Germany. And if you need to have slightly inaccurate records, I think a large cash turnover is always good. So a cash restaurant in the West End here, probably a pretty good operation.
Also good for tax evasion or something like that, but I guess that comes both together.
Your number two option.
Yeah, it's actually caused by the situation, that you still need often cash in Germany. In other countries, you don't really need it anymore, but here you should have something available. So I tend to not carry a big wallet, so I have to look for an ATM all the time when I'm running out. So what I was always thinking, it would be useful to have some kind of app, like a peer-to-peer thing. We could look for some people close, like in the close area, that maybe have too much cash in their pocket.
For some reason or another.
Yeah, for some reason. And I could just say, I need now 50 euros. And I PayPal you or whatever. Yeah, how we do it with amongst friends, but with strangers.
And criminals.
I thought, probably there's not a lot of regulation around that also, or like in monitoring. So I'm sure you could abuse something of that also.
Well, let's put it this way. You would meet very interesting people.
Yeah. Or like eBay classified ads, the kind of cash transactions I was doing there. Okay.
So my number two option, now it still involves finding a partner in Switzerland. However, last year around this time, my vacation was actually hiking around Mont Blanc. So there's an amazing track. It takes you like 8 days. You start out in France. In Les Ouches, and then you hike around the base of Mont Blanc, you go through Italy and then into Switzerland, and there is a lot of green border into Switzerland. So if you are, you know, buff enough that you can carry a really heavy backpack with a ton of cash, you can really easily get it into Switzerland. So,
but it's not like in Ischke where there's also a lot of border control, looking who has bought what on the other side, basically, is it?
Yeah, look, maybe I'm probably thinking too small, or where I'm not thinking about enough cash. But at least you can move cash across the border, across a green border, into Switzerland. Yeah. So that would be my number two option.
Yeah. And for those who don't know what Ischgl is, it's a ski resort in Austria, but you can basically on skis cross the border into Switzerland, get some food or buy some cigarettes or something like that, duty-free, and go back on skis.
Now, your number one suggestion for laundering some money?
Maybe just starting a cryptocurrency and doing an ICO. I'm sure that's being used also quite a lot now for that. And actually, there was also some news around, like fake news, apparently, that there is going to be a monitoring system for money laundering there. And then there was panic in the whole scene. But it turned out to be just fake news.
Now, my last one, it is, admittedly, it's a very, very bad idea and it takes forever. However, I am pretty proud of, it's not just money laundering, but it's also tax evasion. So now, there was also a bit of a Seinfeld episode about this kind of. So in Germany, there is a deposit scheme for drinks. Now, as you know, Stefan, at our office, we drink a ridiculous amount of these Red Bull energy drinks, and they also have like Coke and whatnot, and there's actually a reasonable amount of deposit on it, like 25 cents. And a couple weeks ago, we had one of our clients came to visit, and we had just an entire, our kitchen was just full of hundreds of these empty cans. And so I all took them to one of the supermarkets where there are these little machines where you can put in can by can and get the deposit back. And so I think I put in 350 cans or something and got back a reasonable amount of cash. And so that was actually so obviously because the company, Align GmbH, bought the cans and I got the deposit back in cash. That was basically a tax-free deduction of cash out of the company just into my personal account. And so there has to be a good money laundering scheme with, obviously, if you have an army of people that just shove little cans into this machine.
Maybe that's also why the mob controls often like the trash collection.
Isn't that a deposit scheme?
Yeah, nowadays, I mean.
So this would be the 21st century Sopranos.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, so I hope there was a great solution for every one of your money laundering and terrorist financing
needs. This was, of course, only for educational reasons, right? Please don't do this at home, yeah? Or we are not responsible for anything that might happen afterwards to you.
So hopefully you've seen that I think we're all ready for a bit of a vacation if our thoughts around RegTech and innovation end up in money laundering schemes. And with that, I'm actually off for 2 weeks. I'm going to do some biking down in Slovenia and look forward to a new episode when I'm back in the office.
Are you transporting some cash back and forth across the
border? I'm not sure Slovenia is great for that. But in any case, have a great summer, everyone, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening. Let's continue the conversation on Twitter. Follow our dedicated podcast handle, @TheRegTechRep. Make sure to rate this podcast and send your thoughts and comments to TheRegTechReport@Align.com. Once again, that's TheRegTechReport@Align.com. You can also follow Align on LinkedIn, Facebook, or Twitter, or catch up on our podcasts on Align.com/TheRegTechReport.